Yo, 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 live from F102, this is Art As We Know It. Welcome to this episode 8 of season 2 of our podcast, where we hope to share art knowledge with you guys and help inspire others to find art in your daily lives.
Today on the podcast, we have myself, Muhib, I go by Moo.
Ilion, I go by Ilion.
Nita, I go by Nita.
And Silas.
Silas. Yeah, and our main topic for today is Jewish and Christian art. But before we dive into it, let's hear the answer to our trivia question from last week.
Last week's trivia question was, in tradition of Christian art, which saint is associated with an ox?
I don't know this answer. Do you know this, Alien?
I have no idea.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm 100% sure.
No, you definitely know it.
No, I don't know.
No, I think Silas knows the answer.
Yeah, Silas.
Well, the answer is Saint Luke.
Saint Luke.
I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, I definitely didn't know that. What happened today in history, in art history specifically?
So today in art history, artist Clara Louise Bell was born. Clara Louise trained in Cleveland and New York at the Art Students League. She was an award-winning miniaturist and a member of the American Society of Miniature Painters. One of her most famous paintings is Portrait Miniature, which is obviously a miniature portrait, which is usually executed in gouache, watercolor, or enamel.
I've never heard of a miniature portrait. Anyways, talking about our first topic today, Christian and Jewish architectures and the similarities and differences between the two. Many of you may know of perhaps one of the most famous museums in the world today, the Hagia Sophia. But the Hagia Sophia was once a church built during the era of the Byzantines by Justinian I. And later it was transitioned into a mosque under the Ottoman Turks.
Yeah, it's in Turkey, correct?
Yeah, current day Turkey.
Yeah, and then now it's like today it's a museum, correct?
Yeah, it was later converted into a museum, and so many of the architectural pieces within the museum include the columns, which are very significant of other Christian architectural pieces.
You know, that's funny because, you know, even though it has these columns indoors, when you look at it from a bird's eye view or from a, let's say, outdoors view, you see the minarets, which are very characteristic of Islamic architecture.
Right.
You see that a lot in mosques. You see that in a lot in the Spanish Islamic architecture.
Like the Alhambra Palace.
Exactly.
And the Dome of Rock. They're really known for their minarets.
Exactly.
And you brought up a good point. The dome of the Hagia Sophia was one of the defining points of the Hagia Sophia when it was built. And it was built in a short time span of 6 years, which was very very remarkable at that time period.
So if you were to go back and you were to, well, not go back, but if you were to go to the Hagia Sophia today, would you consider it a mosque or would you consider it a church?
Well, it has characteristics of both a mosque and a church when it was converted to a mosque by the Ottomans. They made sure to keep many Christian characteristics intact, such as the columns, which I talked about before. And in addition, they added minarets and other Muslim architecture pieces.
It also has a basilica, correct?
Correct.
Hagia Sophia. Yeah, I think that's also very important to, well, just the structure of a church.
Right. A basilica is, well, it was previously used as the primary, you could say, blueprint for many churches.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we're talking about Christian art, you know, architecture. What about the Jewish?
So something that I found interesting was the Temple of Jerusalem. So pretty much whenever this was made, it joined all the Israeli major religious objects into one monarchy in one city. So it brought all of the tribes together through the temple, which was made by David's son, Solomon. Pretty much the site where they chose it was where they believed that Abraham had sacrificed his son Isaac, which is a well-known story about how
God asked for the favorites, like the most favorite thing to you, and
he decided that he would sacrifice his son.
Right.
the temple is built as an adobe for the ark and a palace of the assembly for the entire people of the community. It has a really big courtyard, which I think it's nice because not a lot of architectures have, like, a designated space for people to, like, talk and, like,
intermingle together. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think it's nice because these tribes often argued over the land, and now that they have, like, a place where they can all, like, come together and share one common value, it kind of gets rid of all of the disputes that they had.
When you look at the Temple of Jerusalem, it looks very, very different from the Hagia Sophia on the outside. The Hagia Sophia on the outside has a lot more color. It's a lot more vibrant. It has, you know, the big dome, and it also has, you know, the thin minarets. When you look at the Temple of Jerusalem, on the other hand, it's very rectangular in its shape, and it doesn't have much color other than the color of the stone that's used to build it.
I mean, the time difference really comes into play here, because, like, during the time that this was built, it, like, people didn't really have access to, like, all of these spectacular
colors and stuff like
materials-wise.
Available. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And the Hagia Sophia was actually built in around 500. It started being built in 532 and ended in 537, which was a short time span of about 5 to 6 years, which was very remarkable in that time period.
And considering the Hagia Sophia was known, like, as Justinian's most remarkable work for the Byzantine Empire, which is also very nice because no other artwork could live up to it.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting how, like, the Hagia Sophia, even though it was, well, if you look back in its history, there were just so many earthquakes. And the fact that it's, like, so well-maintained and it's still maintains its beauty from those days is very, very, I guess, impressive.
And then they put a lot of work into it, you can tell.
Yeah, and then when you, like, the Temple of Jerusalem, I know that not a lot of it is left, and the only thing that remains is the wall.
The Western Wall, which now in replace of it, which is much like the Hagia Sophia, how it was taken over by Muslims, this was also taken over by Muslims, and the Dome of Rock is now there. But I believe that a lot of Jewish people still go by the wall and pray.
Right. The Western Wall is seen as a symbol of Judaism in Jerusalem.
Yes.
Yeah, I find it pretty fascinating how these massive architectures were built over 2,000 years ago. They didn't have access to these modern-day technologies. Like, how did they manage to build all these massive buildings, and how they were, like, maintained for thousands of years?
Yeah, right. I think that's very, very interesting. Now that we talked about Jewish and Christian architecture, I think the next piece of art that both cultures / religions have is manuscripts. The Jewish religion also has manuscripts, and the biblical manuscripts of the Christians. So if we look at Jewish manuscripts, let's first look at the Christian manuscripts. Let's refer to the Lindisfarne Gospels. When you look at the Lindisfarne Gospels, it's very, the font of the text is very unique. Right. To Christian culture. It's seen a lot in other copies of the Bible, of just writing anywhere in Christian culture. And it's very colorful. On the other hand, there's the Golden Haggadah, which is the Jewish manuscript, one of the Jewish manuscripts that is still around. And it, although it does not have as many words, it's replaced by images. On the few pictures that we have, you know, there's a lot of images of stories. One of them, there's a page that talks about, or not talks about, but shows the four plagues and how it, affects the Egyptians and how they were suffering. And the Jewish manuscripts tend to have a lot more images, especially in the Golden Haggadah.
I guess in this artwork, it's right how people say a picture is worth 1,000 words. It speaks for itself rather than having words to explain it.
Yeah. Right. And if you look at the style of both, researching the topic and looking into the style of it, they're both referred to as something called a carpet page. If you look at it, you'll think it's something like a very well-knit carpet, the way it's
created.
Yeah. and it looks like something you could put on a room.
But one thing about Jewish manuscripts, they're not all pictures. So right. there are other manuscripts out there. For example, the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are simply just pages of Hebrew words written out. And these, it's just Hebrew on dozens of pages.
Yeah, you know, the fact that it does, like, the culture itself doesn't specifically stay to one habit, such as, like, only making pictures and limiting the number of words, and the fact that it goes and makes pages just full of Hebrew kind of shows the flexibility of it. Yeah. But I think I'd also like to see, you know, what do you think are the not only the cultural influences on, like, making these Jewish manuscripts, but also what about the locations they were in?
I mean, there's, like, a really interesting cross-cultural style mix with the Golden Haggadah, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they were all made in Europe. Like, that was, like, the most popular area at the time because everything else was, I guess, underdeveloped. So the Golden Haggadah, it takes Gothic style, which a lot of people assume is, like, Christian, but it was just a very popular European technique, so it, like, blends the two cultures together.
In addition to the Gothic styles of the Golden Haggadah, it's very interesting to see how the characters that are depicted in the actual manuscript are, they're dressed in modern clothing for that time period. They don't go with clothing from when the event actually happened, because, like, Egyptians back then, when the events actually happened, they weren't as clothed as they were, as they're seen in the manuscripts. They would have a lot more jewelry, stuff like that, whereas in these manuscripts, the army of the Egyptians is shown with shields and spears, and they're riding on horses, and they have metal helmets, much like the medieval. So I think I can see where that Gothic influence comes from. And I think that also brings up the term of aniconism, where, oh, well, that doesn't specifically bring it up, but I think we can bring up aniconism, where it's the absence of material representations of, like, the supernatural world. So, like, some bands might be, like, you can't depict the faces of saints. I know that in Islam specifically, you can't depict the face of Prophet Muhammad. So, in here, in these images, God is not specifically shown. So I feel like that's something that may have been, you know, banned in that specific time.
I think you brought up a really good point. And you can see the influence that these three religions have on each other. Like you said, in Islam, how they're not allowed to depict the Prophet Muhammad and stuff like that.
Yeah, and then going back to the scrolls, you know, they're the oldest. They're the oldest record of the, you know, the Jewish Torah. And, you know, although, and I think that's where we can see that, you know, the images aren't as important back then, because you just want to write down the message. You just want to write down whatever there is. But even that in itself is kind of, you know, beautiful, the way it's depicted and written down. It's very neat. And then, although there's not many, like, not the entire, like, not all the scrolls are there, whatever there is left seems very, very important to the Jewish community.
And I think one really interesting thing that I found while researching is that the Dead Sea Scrolls were actually found in a series of caves near the site which was known as the Ayin Fechsha Caves.
That's near the Dead Sea.
Right. Current-day Dead Sea in the West Bank.
Yeah, I guess that's how they got their name, huh?
Well, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. So I think that the big takeaway is that although they're, like, they're very different from each other, they each have their own reasons for being so, and correct, they each bring their own style of beauty.
Right.
Like the Dead Sea Scrolls, it's so simple that it's beautiful. It's all very neatly written. It's very in line. The Lindisfarne Gospels, it brings the color of gold, it brings floral designs, and it brings that that unique text to the to the manuscript. The Golden Haggadah brings images, and it brings the events to life of the past, but it also paints a modern light on it.
So earlier we mentioned how Christian and Jewish art could have many differences, But within Christian art itself, can also have many differences. For example, the Pietas really exemplify this idea really well.
So what is a Pieta then?
So a Pieta is a picture or sculpture of the Virgin Mary holding the dead body of Jesus Christ after his crucifixion.
And so this is after he's off the cross,
this
correct?
After that, yeah. And this is many years, like over 1,000 years. And there are many different versions of these Pietas. Some of the most well-known ones include Rockin Pieta, the St. Peter's Pieta, Pieta Palestrina, and the Rockin Pieta, the artist of this piece, created this out of wood. And what this artist did was he emphasized the gruesome aspects of the crucifixion and death of Jesus Christ. And she portrays Mary's face with agony and disgust. And Jesus's wounds are very emphasized, and the blood is created with color. And in stark contrast to this piece, you see the St. Peter's Pieta in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. This one was created by Michelangelo. And what this piece did was that this sparked a lot of controversy during the Renaissance period. People accused Michelangelo of twisting the actual plot of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And in this piece, Jesus almost has no wounds at all. Jesus has like a very neutral expression on her face. Jesus supposedly was around age 35, age 40 during his death. And Mary was his mother, so supposedly she's probably pretty old, 60 or 70 years old. And what Michelangelo did was he portrayed Mary and Jesus around the same age, both quite young, and portraying them with ideal features, both very young.
Yeah, I think that's very, like, that contrast is very, very...
The idealistic versus realistic was very...
It's kind of confusing to me, because why would you, like, I understand, like, you want to remember the event. It's a very special event in Christian history. So why would, looking back at the Rodkin Pieta, why would you want to look at it as such a sad event? Because a lot of the other sects in Christianity, a lot of the other people who are Christians, they tend to see that as like something joyful because Jesus is going to heaven, going back to where he belongs. And so my question is, why would you paint that in such a like terrible light? Why would you show Jesus as something weak?
I don't necessarily think that it's showing off as weak. I think it's just putting more emphasis on the event, like the pain he had to go through, the pain and suffering that his mother also felt. Yeah. I think it's more of the message rather than like feeling weakness.
So then why would you, if you want to show the pain and show how much he sacrificed, why would you take that pain away from other Pietas? Where there's no wound, Jesus is, fit and healthy. It looks as if, and Mary, instead of crying, looks kind of happy. Why would you take away that point?
Well, this kind of relates to the time period this was created in. This was created during the Renaissance when humanism was really emphasized.
Which one are you referring to?
The St. Peter's Pieta. Mary's like young, ideal,
right.
And this was created in the Renaissance where there was huge emphasis on humanism and portraying people with ideal features. Many paintings during this time, people were created with like ideal bodies. They were muscular, women are good looking.
And, you're saying they're not now?
In this time period specifically.
Well, I think another thing which plays into the depiction of Mary and Jesus in this Rodkin Pieta is the fact of perspective. The perspective of the artist also takes a big part in the Pieta, and it's also the perspective of the viewer. The way the viewer sees the Pieta impacts what they think of the Pieta, and
I was saying, I saw I saw weakness, but as Nitha pointed out, other people might see strength,
strength
through the pain.
Correct. Yeah.
So then, how does an artist make sure that like. Through the in the Pieta, how would you make sure that your message is, delivered? If the Pieta, like that Rockin Pieta, if you want to make sure that your message of pain and suffering and Jesus Christ going through all that and still sacrificing himself for you, if you want to make sure that that message of, you know, strength through pain is there, then how would you make sure that, you know, something like, it came into my mind that, you know, they're showing Jesus Christ as weak. So how would you make sure that message is delivered?
Well, I think that all goes into how you depict the subject of your artwork. For example, in the Rock and Pieta, there's a, you would say Mary looks distressed, distraught almost, and she's just heartbroken.
Right.
And I feel like when you're looking at it, like you see, you don't really see like a sense of tears, you just see sadness. And I feel like that's just the way that the artist was able to portray this. It showed her coping through the pain. And you can see, even though she seems very distraught, at the same time she seems peaceful with it. At the same time she seems, the art piece just seems beautiful.
I see what you mean.
The artist also emphasizes the wounds, emphasizes the crown around Jesus' head, the blood, the red blood all over the wood, and Jesus' face, the expression on his face is just grim defeat.
Yeah, so I guess it's just a matter of like what aspect of that event you want to depict and how you want to remember it. Very, very, very interesting talk. Very in-depth talk about the Pietas. And honestly, if we didn't have this, I'd probably think the Rock and Pieta was making fun of Jesus Christ instead of remembering him, but... Well,
that's why we have these talks.
Yeah. Probably think the Rock and Pieta was making fun of Jesus Christ instead of remembering him, but... Well,
that's why we have these talks.
Yeah.
So we're going to start to conclude our segment here today, and I'd like to give you all a fun fact about Christianity. So when becoming ordained, Catholic priests are still taught how to perform exorcisms.
Like exorcising demons out of people? Like that kind of exorcism? Wow, that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Well, who would have thought? I mean, you never know if you ever... Never know,
I mean,
when
I
that
get,
might come in handy.
I mean, yeah, I mean... Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess it's part of their tradition, and, you know, it probably, in their religion, they probably believe that it still happens.
Right.
You know, not to disrespect them, but, you know, like, I'm saying it's part of their culture.
Right.
So, I think it's very interesting how, you know, they're still taught to perform exorcisms when, you know, that it's more of, like, exorcisms were...
In the past, kind of.
Yeah, but they were kind of... Like they were kind of more favorite in the past. They were more
right.
favorite, like they were more popular in the past.
Yeah.
You don't see that a lot today. Yeah. So we also have a art history joke for you guys today. Silas, you want to say the joke?
All right. Earth without art is just eh, which is a problem. Unless you're Canadian, eh.
Silas.
I'm not Canadian. You can't
yeah.
pull it off.
Okay, sorry, guys. We're never going to have Silas say a joke again. That was so bad. Okay. Don't worry, guys. You won't have to listen to that again. Alrighty. So here's our trivia question for next week. So if you want to know the answer to this, please tune in next time. The question for today is...
What culture was Picasso influenced by?
If you want to find out, tune in next time.
Yeah, and if you want to know more about the works we've talked about today, check out our blog at www.artaswenowitpodcast.wordpress.com.
All right. See you later, guys.
See you later, guys. Peace.